798, adopt the Community Equity and Inclusion Plan for all City of Portland public improvement contracts that utilize alternative contracting methods and have estimated contract values of $10 million to $25 million and require consideration of modified community benefits agreements for public improvement contracts with estimated contract values in excess of $25 million. Item 799, direct the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services Procurement Services Division to develop and implement a contract delivery method selection process for public improvement projects with construction contracts estimated at $10 million and over. Item 800, direct the Office of Management and Finance and the Office of Equity and Human Rights to develop a community opportunities enhancement program and funding plan.
I'd like to start with some brief introductory remarks. First of all, I want to thank all of you who are here who've worked on this issue over a period of months, if not years, to take into account the varying views of different stakeholders. These resolutions that are coming before the City Council today, I want to be very clear, this is a first reading, so there will be no vote on this item today. This is going to come back to the council in August. We haven't settled on a date yet, but we will certainly publicize the date in August when we bring it back for final consideration of amendments, some of which I'm sure will be put on the table today. We wanted to give the stakeholders who've worked so hard on this an opportunity for public testimony, and so that's our primary objective today. Given the time allotted today, and how many people do we have signed up right now?
Here, there may be another sheet outside.
Okay, so why don't we do this? Assuming that there are 23, let's start with 2 minutes of public testimony each. That's the same amount that you get at the legislature. It's a little less than we like to do here, but we obviously want to get through this today. So if people could please limit their testimony to 2 minutes. If it turns out we have another sheet, we might have to further reduce that, but let's assume we have 23. When I took office, I wanted to make sure that the CEIP would meet the city's goals for contracting while also meeting the critical timelines for Bureau construction projects. This project both increases capacity in the minority contracting community while also protecting the rights of workers. I and my fellow city councilors want to ensure that this project will meet our expectations and balance these needs. The CEIP is an inclusive plan that provides equal opportunities for both union and open shop participation. That's something that I believe is very important. The CEIP goals related to the utilization of women and minority contractors, workforce, and apprentices are much clearer and more consistent and align with our city's stated goals. The CEIP plan is going to continue to be an important part of the city's fair contracting forum to ensure collaboration and conversations regarding important contracting issues happen in the same place. The CEIP sets clear expectation for contractors and city's engagement with the Oversight Committee, and that's the Community Equity Inclusion Committee in particular. It sets forth specific timelines and content to be reported to the CEIC for their review and for their feedback. The CEIP will create a 1% set aside, which will apply to all public improvement construction contracts, not strictly to alternative contracts, to ensure that the city's goals are met. The CEIP pulled many components from the modified CBA and all the community benefits agreement, and although many provisions are substantially similar, the format was changed to provide greater clarity with regard to the obligations of each of the parties. So with that, I will turn it over to Dante and to Tom. We have some invited invited testimony as well today, so we'll start with the Chief Administrative Officer, Tom Reinhart, and the Director of Office and Human Rights, Dante James. And I don't know which of you gentlemen would like to go first. Director James?
Thank you. I drew the short straw.
Am I not on?
There we go.
There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners.
It's my pleasure to be here just to offer some opening introductory remarks, and I think you've done a great job of kind of defining and describing why we're here this morning, essentially to address the issues of the underutilization of minorities and women in contracting and in the workforce. And I don't think there's any question about the fact that there is a need for this type of process, these types of plans. I in some sense, came late to the game, and as the process was begun, I was truly lucky to work with an excellent team from OMF, and I truly just want to thank them personally and publicly. Christine Moody, who's now moved on to the port, has worked extensively and tried to bring this to conclusion, so it's a shame that she's not here to witness this. Molly Washington, who is sitting here, has been instrumental in putting her legal skills to use in crafting and creating the document that you see before you. Teresa Elliott, her engineering skills and her work within BES, is her intimate knowledge of how this would actually play out was very beneficial in putting this all together. Kathleen Massier, the same. Jamie Waltz, and her skills at keeping us on track as a project manager were unparalleled. Betsy Ames, phenomenally engaged in crafting this document. And then Tiffany Penson, my road buddy, as we drove all around the city meeting with lots of different people explaining this process. So many thanks to them and many others who were involved in this process, and certainly Tom coming in and shepherding this to get us where we are. As you said, it's the CEIP, the Community Equity and Inclusion Plan, which also includes the partnership agreement, the Exhibit A that you have, as well as the creation and staffing of a Community Equity and Inclusion Committee, the CEIC. The 1% plan will be, or proposal resolution is also before you, as well as the need to craft the process by which we will determine the best projects to put these plans on. So that's the what. The why is really simple. As I said, these processes are necessary because of the continued underutilization of minority women-owned businesses and minority women in the workforce on city-funded construction projects. We cannot, however, fail to call out the reason for the underutilization, and that is that I would suggest to you that racism is still explicit and implicit in the construction industry that impacts contracting and hiring in this city. And the outcomes, without plans such as these, bear this out, as do the narratives by the people who work in this industry, in contracting, and own companies, and are trying to get employed in the workforce. And these resolutions, this plan, is an effort to try to put the city in the best position to address and not be a participant in the continuing racism or implicit bias that infects the industry currently. And so that's why we're here. And so I don't want to lose that reasoning, that rationale, and the purpose for why we're here. And I think that this plan and these resolutions go a long way to try to address that. You'll hear lots of testimony. I'll be back probably explaining a little bit more. The short answer for me is I think this is a more robust document. And if you look at the original document that had aggregate goals for MW and ESB, theoretically you could have met every goal with all white male-owned businesses, and that was never the intent. This document changes that because it disaggregates the goals and requires specific utilization of MBEs as well as WBEs, 12% and 5%. And so for that reason alone, the document needed to be changed and adjusted. And this document does many other things besides that, but it absolutely addresses that. So with that introduction, I will stop and let Tom take us a little farther.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director James. For the record, Tom Reinhart, Chief Administrative Officer. I became more deeply engaged in this process in April on the mayor's request, and I just want to provide a couple of what I consider contextual remarks to why this set of companion resolutions is so important. Both staff and leaders in the contracting community have recognized for years that a piecemeal approach to our efforts at providing more opportunities to both MWESB contractors while also expanding minority and female participation in the workforce is problematic on many levels. For example, in my conversations with directors over the past few months, I've learned that we have several different efforts currently going on that all had different programmatic approaches to achieve our goals. The Washington Park Reservoir Project, the Portland Building Reconstruction Project, which I am deeply involved in, Pioneer Square Reconstruction, and the 10th and Yamhill Project all have different approaches. That means a different set of Molly's team from the City Attorney's Office, equity staff, bureau staff. This is an effort to really give the city one approach to this that can provide certainty both to the contracting community and to bureaus. In April, after Dante and Tiffany finished their excellent outreach work, the mayor directed me to try to figure out how to take all that feedback. And I want to again thank my team because they went through dozens and dozens of comments, phone calls, meetings with community partners to put together the product that you have in front of you. And we come before you today with the confidence that these resolutions provide the city with the structure required to not only meet our goals, but goals in terms of equity and attacking these problems that have persisted for so many years, but also to fulfill what the council directed your various bureaus to do in the budget process, which is accomplish ambitious construction goals as the city continues to grow. So I want to make sure that point is clear, that we've tried to meet that delicate balance. And now I'll turn it back over to Dante to walk through the first resolution, any pieces of that that you want to do an overview of.
Thank you. Thank you. As you said, Mr. Mayor, the foundation of this document was the CBA, the modified CBA, as well as other plans that were being used by other bureaus on other projects. Specific differences from that modified CBA that was used was that, as I said, the goals are disaggregated for MWBEs and ESBs. There's no specific union signatory requirement. There's no specific additional requirements for union utilization of apprentice programs in preference in that regard. There are prescriptive requirements for reporting to the Oversight Committee, the CEIC. The 1% fund, which is brought separately, was removed from the initial CEIP document and is being brought separately, so should there be a need to modify or adjust the actual CEIP, the 1% will always be able to stand by itself and continue. And then there were formatting changes. So those were probably the most significant changes from the modified to the current. There are significant similarities. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I would suggest the outreach is one of them. In how we perform the outreach and who we heard from. I have a document that gives you a little more detail, which I'm not going to go into. But just to give you a brief oversight, there was an email that went out to 42 organizations or individuals that detailed the new CEIP and offered the opportunity for feedback and review over a period of a couple of months. Of those organizations that received the information, we as in Tiffany and I, met with 21 organizations or individuals to explain, to answer any questions, and to get their feedback in person at those meetings, and then offer them additional time to review the document and give us feedback, us being the working group in writing after a much more in-depth review by them. So we received written feedback from 22 of the organizations who we met with out of the 42. Significant organizations that we met with were, or at least that we offered the opportunity for meeting with, was NAMCO, MCIP, Oregon Tradeswomen, Constructing Hope, Portland. I mean, I'm not going to read them all to you. Several of the union trades, union or the Urban League. So we received feedback from, as you can see, most of those, and many folks from within the Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity as well. We specifically met with three construction organizations, Northwest Utility Contractor Association, OAMI, and Portland Business Development Group, PBDG, as well as apprentice programs, Associated Builders and Subcontractors, Construction Industry Training Trust, and Northwest College of Construction. So, as well as others that you can see who provided feedback. A significant amount of that feedback was incorporated into the CEIP. And
Ms. Washington can give you some more details about that specifically. But I will submit to you that a significant amount of that feedback was incorporated. Some organizations that we reached out to didn't give us feedback. Some we reached out to do a personal meeting with didn't respond. We followed up. I think Tiffany's emails were flying back and forth, and she was, I can tell you, very, very intent on getting as much opportunity for feedback as possible. The feedback then came into a, not to me or to an individual, although some sent it to me, but it went to a city email box that was then utilized to compile all that feedback, and then Molly did her legal work and put a lot of that into the document after consultation with a lot of the bureaus, with some of the council staffs and other things. We incorporated as absolutely as much as I think that we could, and from a legal perspective, as legally was allowed to be done. If you look at, again, some of the similarities as well, on page 7 plus, it talks about the CEIC, which is, I'm sorry, page 7 of the actual CEIP document. It talks about the CEIC, which in some sense is similar to the original LMCOC, the Labor Management Community Oversight Committee. Try not to throw too many acronyms at you. Here it's designed to review performance and advise on means of better achieving the goals. They will receive quarterly reports from the contractor, as well as be able to forecast their forecasting reports. So they should be able to know what's expected. They'll get the reports and be able to review whether those goals were actually met. And so those come on a quarterly basis, and they can request to meet with the contractor more often if everyone would agree to that. The CEIC is also can be used to assist the city in enforcing the document. The enforcement is simple. If you are not in compliance with the document as a signatory, it's considered a material breach. You are then subject to liquidated damages. Progress payments can be withheld up to and including termination of the contract. So there is enforcement built into this document. The 1% community capacity support is a more focused and has greater depth of all across the city bureau involvement. And as I think you mentioned, it's not just alternative bidding, but for the entire dollar amount for the expected construction, low bid or not, will be a part of this in hard construction costs. And so it's not just one project's 1%, but it's the totality of the projects that are being paid and done in the city, so that there's a consistent and constant amount that will be known and be able to be utilized by those service providers who are doing workforce provision, et cetera, so that we are building capacity in the city ongoing. So it's not just necessarily this project, but the expectation we are looking in the long term to build the pipeline, for workforce as as construction ramps up in this city. Those, I think, are at least highlights of some of the similarities in this document. As I've said, I think it's more robust. The document speaks to making sure it's a harassment-free workplace and what that means and the training that's expected to be provided by the contractors to the subcontractors. You can see that on page 15 in section B of the actual CEIP. There's requirements for the numbers of restrooms for women on the job site, as well as lactation facilities should those be necessary. So, I mean, it becomes a much more detailed document of expectation of how you are treating your workforce and what you are providing for them to make this truly a harassment-free workplace. Is there a way to make that perfect? Absolutely not. We tried to be as detailed as possible without putting in every possible reason there would be harassment on the workplace, on the work site. But this document, as an example of those kinds of things that are in this document that were not in the previous document, that give this more teeth and I think greater depth and breadth when we're addressing what we need to address here in this for the issue. So, thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
So, Mr. Mayor, just to check with you here, we have two other pieces, the two other pieces of the three companion resolutions. Do you want us to walk through those quickly?
Yes, because okay. we're going to vote on them individually, but we want the presentation and any public testimony
Excellent.
To be reflecting on all three of those resolutions.
Okay. So item 799, I just want to do a brief overview, and then and Ms. Washington is going to go through the details of it. It really alludes back to my opening comments around, you know, developing a contract delivery method selection process that's both effective for...
Tom, I'm sorry to interrupt. I want to correct myself. We're not taking any votes today, but when we do vote, we will vote individually on the three resolutions. And so today, when we take public testimony, we'll be taking testimony on all three of the resolutions.
Excellent.
Sorry
Thank
for
you.
The interruption.
It's okay. I'll try to get my rhythm back. No. We want to make sure that the contract delivery method selection process in terms of how this goes through procurement is effective. It vets the projects correctly and decides how they're going to be approached in the most effective manner. And going back to my opening comments, historically the city has done approximately 75 million public improvement projects each year at actually around $75 million. So, I mean, 75 projects at $75 million. So strange how those numbers worked out. But in the past 3 or 4 years, we've seen that number significantly creep up. So if you smoothed out, you know, the previous 20 years, we'd be at that 75 figure. But we're seeing that go way up, and we anticipate that to continue to climb. So we really want, this section was worked on extensively to make sure that we have a robust process to vet these projects and to make sure we're approaching them correctly in terms of the CEIP. So Molly, you want to take it away from there?
Sure. So the second resolution directs the Bureau of Revenue and
Molly,
Financial...
Molly, I'm sorry. Could you identify yourself for the record?
Sure. Molly Washington, Deputy City Attorney with the City Attorney's Office, directs the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services Procurement Services Division to develop and implement a contract delivery method selection process for public improvement projects with construction contracts estimated at $10 million or over. What that basically means is that when you have a construction public improvement contract, that typically gets defaulted to low bid per statute. So if you're low bidder, you win the project. However, the statute and code provide for an exemption from the low bid process if you meet a certain amount of findings. Why this is a companion resolution and important for purposes of the CEIP is that the CEIP and the equity plans that Tom discussed on the various other projects are things that really only apply when you have an alternative contracting method utilized. So what we've done here is to try to provide, or what we're requesting, is to try to provide the bureaus with a little bit of process in how they're going to determine what type of contract delivery method is really appropriate for the project that they have in front of them. Alternative contract delivery methods can provide substantial benefits, public benefits, as well as cost savings to the city, and are typically used on projects that have a bit of technical complexity to them, some operational and scheduling constraints, public safety and risk impacts, and projects that require specialized expertise. But oftentimes, this method can really only be utilized if it's considered early in the construction project process. So the benefits, again, to this type of contract delivery method, which we generally call alternative contracting, is that it allows the city to consider factors other than cost when selecting the contractor. So instead of just awarding the contract to whoever has the lowest bid, the city can consider other things such as the qualifications of the contractor, the experience and expertise of the contractor for that specific scope of work. They can also consider the qualifications to perform the work, the project team involved, subconsultants, key trades, as well as corporate responsibility, which is generally also included, and their commitment to equity. The city has done several of these types of projects, not a lot, but several. And as we've looked at some of the results from those post-project reports, as well as what we expect to see in terms of benefits, these projects that are alternative contracting methods have had enhanced partnerships with the contractors. They're able to bring the contractors in early, so they realize a lot of benefits in terms of risk mitigation, risks such as material procurement, safety, constructability, access, community relations. also value engineerings, which can result in substantial cost savings. Again, as I mentioned earlier, these projects also lend themselves to applying an equity plan, whether it's the CEIP or some other type of equity plan. Those are available tools that can be used when a contractor is involved early in the process. So the purpose of this resolution is just to allow the city and the bureaus to be very intentional in how they decide what type of method they're going to use for their construction projects, whether it be low bid or an alternative procurement, and to have a consistent approach for the bureaus to use citywide so that when they are thinking at the inception stage of what this project has in terms of risks and what it needs, they can be thinking along the lines of, is an alternative procurement an option here? And that's hopefully going to enable us to use these types of contracting methods a little bit more for projects that have some of the unique factors that I mentioned earlier and get better value for the city, but also be able to utilize some of these equity plans that we've brought today. So basically the resolution directs the Bureau to develop and then implement across bureaus a contract delivery method selection process that they will use to determine whether each project will be low bid or alternative. And that will be at the $10 million level where those projects have to go through this process. At the $1 million level, we'd just like to encourage that bureaus utilize this as they see fit. If you have any questions.
Excellent work. Thank you.
Dante James again. The resolution directing the Office of Management and Finance and the Office of Equity and Human Rights to develop a community opportunities and enhancement program and a funding plan is just that. It will allow us to put the best process together in order to be able to determine where the best use of those funds go. It's separate in a sense from the CEIC, the Equity Inclusion Committee, different than the CBA, which was the LMCOC, did a little bit of both. There was concern, question, distress about the possibility of an appearance of impropriety or conflict of interest, and so this separately is to address that. There may, in fact, be people who are working on the CEIC who are also doing workforce service provision, and so they should be able to avail themselves of this fund should they wish to and apply for the grants that are available. So that's why it's done separately in this instance. The process by which that will be determined yet is to be fleshed out between OMF and my office, but it will be done in the form of grants similar to the CBA. The modified CBA, a significant portion will go for workforce, and then a smaller percentage of that would go for contracting support and assistance. But that's the kind of broad process for this this fund.
That concludes what we plan to present. We're available for questions and any other assistance we can provide.
Very good. Thank you. And we have some invited testimony today. The first three, and I don't know if they're all here, Nate McCoy is here, and Jeff Moreland is here, and is Willie Myers here? There's Willie, way in the back. Come on up, gentlemen. Hey, why don't you go ahead and start?
You want me to go first?
Yeah, sure, okay. Why not?
So first off, Mayor, Commissioners, thank you for having me today. For the record, my name is Nate McCoy. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Chapter of the National Association of Minority Contractors. First, just for the record, I want to put out there that NAMAC's stance is we're a body of membership that is not anti-union, that is not pro-union, but pro-business choice. We think we have to have capacity in our community to have an option and flexibility to make decisions on our own and certainly make relationships with those that are both on the non-union and union side. So just wanted to make sure I put that out there. As it relates to our CEIP and CBA discussions today, I want to give you guys a lot of positive credit for the leadership and the road trips that I've seen Tiffany and Dante take. I've had to turn my phone off a couple times because they're really trying to warrant the kind of conversation that gets us to the point of where we are today. And I appreciate the leadership that's in front of us for staying steadfast to really trying to, as Dante alluded to, create these outcomes that we don't see every day. We've been talking about this discussion for far longer than I've been alive, and we're still having it today. So I'm glad that we're now taking a proactive choice of really looking at this and taking it head on. A couple things that struck out to me in the documents, and I want to err more on the pros side, is I'm ecstatic about the alternative contracting pathway that we're looking at, pointing direction towards some of the community benefit plans that Parks is doing. And I know Amanda's heard me time and time again commend them as I've been on the committee. Both of those two Parks projects have minority GCs operating on them. We just had a meeting 2 weeks ago where both projects are meeting and far exceeding the expectations of minority contracting, minority equity on the workforce, and including women. So both sides, and there's non-union and union representation across the board. So I just can't say enough about multiple processes, you know, even including maybe even some of the CBA projects that, you know, there's not one fix that solves these problems. It's multiple ways of taking businesses at where they're at. The other thing I want to say is I'm also looking forward to the resource conversation, because it's hard work to be out here working feverishly without building capacity for those who carry the voice of minority contractors. You know, I'm in a lot of these meetings. Certainly, I'm outnumbered half the time, and it's okay, but I just want to see a little bit more robustness of resources to, you know, almost put money where our mouth is if we want to see these outcomes come to fruition. So I can't wait for that next chapter of this evolution. And then what's most important, more than even these plans and these agreements, is we've got to get back on track with monitoring, tracking. We've done a horrible job, and our city auditor last year came out with a report really striking hard at the procurement processes and the lack of data. And I don't think anybody behind me could argue that we have a heavy lift to get our tracking systems and our disaggregated information back on track. It's hard to do good work across both sides if we don't have real-time information in which to really embark and come up with solutions. And then what I also want to mention is a little bit more clarity on, you know, what we're going to track. I think time and time again we track people getting into the workforce and getting them on these jobs through the workforce training and hiring programs. What I tend to not see a lot of proactiveness on is after those jobs are done, are these people sustaining a job or are they going back to working at McDonald's or Safeway? It's terrible for me to come across people in my community who went through an apprentice program and found themselves not looking or not finding a job to sustain themselves. I mean, a lot of these social issues we're talking around are housing and, you know, and health care. I mean, have a living wage job really eliminates a lot of those issues. And I would ask that as we move forward and we track, we ask our non-union and union counterparts to give us that information. Because it's more than just the hiring of the folks for these city projects. It's more intentional to show if they actually sustained a job long term. And then lastly, before I let others speak, is I just want to also talk about real quickly mentorship. What I don't see in this document that speaks to it, and it's a glaring issue, that talks about the racism and the discrimination for young minorities that would love to know more about construction, is where are our mentorship programs? And I'm talking more specifically in the schools and highlighting contractors of color and really making sure that they also work with our apprentice programs to, you know, forge opportunities for these kids. It's a hard challenge to, you know, maybe have our white counterparts to come and educate or, you know, really mentor a kid who's got a whole completely lived experience that's very different. We're looking for folks, and you'll hear from one here in a minute, who does this day in, day out. Doesn't get paid a dollar to do it, but does it all day long. So I just want to encourage us to also look at that and be very intentional about what the mentorship of this, these two programs really need to offer and how you guys need to be enforcing that we do it the right way. So with that said, thank you.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate
Mayor,
it.
Mayor, commissioners, my name is Jeff Moreland. I am a president of Raymore Construction. I am also a board member of the National Association of Minority Contractors. I'm going to speak to you today more on behalf of my construction company versus a NAMAC. And again, I want to give credit to Dante and Christine and Tiffany and all the staff for all the work that they put into this. And I think this is a great step in the right direction in terms of being able to look at alternative methods of contracting, to be able to provide the support necessary for minority contractors and contractors to do equity and inclusion. And that's really what it's about. It's about equity and inclusion. The only concerns that I still have, at times I still see almost looking at a CBA as synonymous with equity and inclusion. And I just want to state it's not. I'm union contractor in some areas, and I'm non-union contractor in other trades. And that is specifically based on the unions and what I see in the unions and their commitment for equity and inclusion. And let's just face it, there's some unions that's going to be better than others. You know, a lot of them have struggled, and we know this because at this stage of the game, if it was really about inclusion, you know, the union's been around a long time, I think that our workforce would be a little bit more diverse than it is right now. And that has nothing to do with the owners and their direction. It has everything to do with the fact is that this has been an issue, an ongoing issue for a very, very long time. So Raymore, as a company, we employ a lot of people. We just finished up a $7 million project for TriMet, who's a great owner, and they really stressed this issue. We came out with 84% DBE, MWESB inclusion, and a 64% diversity workforce. We represent exactly what you guys are trying to do. Some of you guys have seen our crews downtown working, and our crews reflect diversity. It reflects inclusion. That's who we are. So I speak to you because I just want you guys to understand that making sure that we don't allow any special interest to hijack what we're trying to do. And what we're trying to do is get equity and inclusion in contracting and in the workforce. And I think that you guys are moving in that direction, and I give you guys all kudos for moving in that direction strong in your team. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Willie Myers. I'm the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbia Pacific Building and Construction Trades Council. I have a quick question. I was under the understanding that there might be some amendments coming forward that we would be also having an opportunity to testify to. Is that?
There is always the opportunity for amendments to come forward. None have been proffered to this point.
All right, then first off, I'd like to thank the city for supplying staff and facilitating the meetings where we were able to work for creating both the CEIP and the CBA concept back into the city's procurement considerations. At this point in time, we would not be in support of the resolutions as written. We believe that it needs to be there needs to be a trigger. So the threshold actually needs to be the trigger that says that we will be doing a community benefits agreement once it hits $25 million. There's a couple other things in it that are also of consideration that we would like to be able to work with you to change before August, before the vote. We're also not in complete favor of the CEIP and the CEIP or the CBP, Community Benefits Plan, and the community. It was contracting equity inclusionary plan is the way it was written to begin with, and its sole focus was on contracting equity at the expense of workforce. There was no mechanics for delivery of workforce, and I have to applaud staff once again for taking us back in the direction and adding those mechanics back to it with both the oversight with the committee, and but that has yet to be determined who's actually on the committee, whether it's meaningful and transparent oversight with accurate data. So it's a good step in the right direction, but at this point in time, we're still not in favor of the CBP or the CEIP. The penalties are added back to it for noncompliance, which we liked. The partnering agreement, which makes people responsible for the delivery. It allows people to take ownership of the delivery of what the city is asking for. It's a partnership agreement is a well-written document. So at that point, without any amendments to it, we would not be in support.
Very good. And just to be clear, these are resolutions, but we're treating this as an ordinance because
Correct.
It's important. So what we're doing today, which is a little unusual, is we're taking testimony today, and then we're effectively giving people a month to consider what's been said today and what testimony has been provided.
Okay.
And then it's still possible for people to provide amendments up until the time when we take the vote next month. So just to be clear, we're trying to be supportive and inclusive of different perspectives on this, and it may be the case that we get some amendments, or we may not. But we're leaving that opportunity open. Commissioner Saltzman.
Yeah, I would like to just float two amendments that I am contemplating with you gentlemen, and I want to see what the testimony is on these amendments as well before I would formally offer them. But one would be to require for projects over $25 million to go straight to a CBA, Community Benefits Agreement, rather than having sort of the internal valuation process,
right,
to simply make it more clear to our bureau directors that this is the direction we want to see city move to. And so that's one amendment. And the second amendment would be to raise the requirement, the threshold for workforce participation requirements from $100,000 to $500,000. $100,000 seems like a pretty low threshold. And, you know, $100,000 contracts don't do a lot in the city public works realm. Mm-hmm. So it seems like $500,000 would be a more appropriate threshold. So I'd be curious if your thoughts.
Sorry
if
I start.
Yeah, go ahead.
So the one caution I would have on raising the threshold for the, I mean, yes, I would be in favor of the first amendment that you brought up. The second amendment, raising the threshold for the workforce hiring language, which also includes apprenticeship, is that the state just passed a resolution or passed a law that so anything over $5 million total construction cost, you're talking about subcontract. So if it's $5 million total construction cost, there are apprenticeship requirements that you want to make sure that you don't fall below the state standards that were just passed. So it's something that we would need to really maybe look at and work on some language that protects. I mean, we should be raising the bar, number one. So, yes, we should have a low threshold. We're Portland. We should be raising the bar. We shouldn't be trying to meet the state minimums. So, I mean, it's just something that I think we need to look at, and I think we could have a workshop and figure out a solution for that.
Mr. Moreland, Mr. McCoy, got any thoughts on that?
So what I'd like to say is we're still in favor of the threshold being raised. I think the challenge that we brought up at the Fair Contracting Forum was pretty spot on. The city typically has contracts of $300,000 and higher that more or less are where you see a lot of the benefits of the workforce training opportunities. So it seems like a program that hasn't changed since 1997 should be adjusted since we're in 2017 to kind of catch up with the times. I guess the other point on that subject is we also want to make sure that we encourage, again, minority contractors. There's a huge swath of contractors who avoid City of Portland work based solely on the workforce training and hiring program. So I agree with Willie on one front that we all care about a robust workforce. We just all want the system to work for those who don't see it beneficial today. So I think that's the comment that I want to stay steadfast to is that, you know, look at the numbers. The numbers are glaringly horrible with the City of Portland when it comes to minority contracting. And this is not synonymously different than what we're talking about with contract development and workforce development. The second on the amendment of $25 million, the only clarifying question I would ask is, are we talking about 4 to 6 projects a year, or are we talking about the 75 that would just automatically trigger the $25 million threshold for a CBA? Because I'm under the understanding that it would be on a more or less 4 to 6, I mean, roughly those amount of projects.
Yeah, I was thinking 4 to 6 projects. I was surprised.
Okay, just
making
sure.
When I heard 75 projects,
yeah, we're just making sure because that wasn't, to my knowledge, what we were talking about, but we would more or less not have a huge opposition of, you know, as Willie said, getting that trigger online.
Okay.
I believe we currently have 4 projects over $25 million in the pipeline, and that 75 number was the grand total.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So just to be clear, so far on the amendments, we don't lose you, Nate, and we get you, Willie. Is that a fair interpretation?
Just to be fair, this amendment just came to my attention this morning, so I haven't even shared it with our group, but I checked in with a couple quick people, and they didn't have any real heartburn, but as we continue this conversation until August, you know, we'll weigh in if we need to.
Great. Jeff, any thoughts?
Yeah, I will table my comment on the threshold with the CBA. I'll table that in because I want to have some offline discussions with some people before we make that. And as far as moving the threshold up, it is a benefit, especially for smaller minority companies and the way they operate and whether it's necessary for them to operate. I think that threshold is moving that up is significant for those to be able to have consistency of workforce as well, because we don't necessarily have the longevity of workforce that we need in terms of in our pipeline that other contractors have. So that threshold at times is difficult for us to achieve, although overall we easily achieve that. But just on specific project specific, due to the nature of the work, at times meeting that threshold can be cumbersome.
Okay, very good.
Thank you for your feedback.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Just one quick added point. We're setting aside 1%, and I believe that for all projects, I believe that part of that money is supposed to go to technical assistance that would help contractors meet that threshold. I mean, that's the whole purpose of this, is to build the capacity. So to use that as an excuse as to why the threshold needs to be lowered, I think is flawed. I mean, just that's my personal opinion, especially when we're setting the money aside for that.
So, thank you. Very good. Thank you. The next three invited testimony, John Jensen, Nicole Rappaport, and James Posey. Good morning. And as morning. Always, just a name for the record would be really helpful.
Great. Thank you. John Jensen. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. I represent IBEW Local 48. That's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. We are the regional electricians union here. We represent about 4,500 members, some of them whom are lucky enough to work right here at the City of Portland. So, and I would say that while not all of our members live here, almost all of them at some point in their career do work here, and even on some of these great city projects we're able to work on. First of all, to the spirit of the resolutions and the reason we're here today, I'd just like to, for our organization, fully support the concept and what we're trying to do here and the importance of this work. I'd also like to thank the city staff and everyone who has put in so much time and effort into this, and also all the other stakeholders who are here and in the room who care about this issue and who want to see more diversity in contracting and in our workforce. As to the specifics, I would support these resolutions with the amendment that Commissioner Saltzman mentioned. I think particularly the First Amendment, which is a trigger to enact the CBA, and I think if we consider the recent success of two CBA projects here and the high achievement levels it attained, I think it's totally appropriate to have that trigger and continue to use that excellent CBA pattern that we've already established here at the city. As for the other amendment, I don't know. Similarly, I just found that out today, and so I'd like to look at it a little more. But I think the interesting thing that brings up is it's my hope that this will be sort of a living document and conversation. I wouldn't be surprised at all to find other areas that we needed to fix and change to make this policy work like we want to for everyone. So having said that, I'm really grateful to be here, and thank you for all your work.
Great. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and to the commissioners. My name is Nicole Rappaport. I am General Counsel for the Operating Engineers Local 701. I went a lot back and forth with my prepared testimony and how I was going to present today, and at the end of the day, I decided that I'm here not just as General Counsel for Local 701, but also as a community member. The work that we've done on the CBA has been very important to me. I moved to the city of Portland 6 years ago. Many of us, I know, are transplants as well here. So I often get the feedback that, well, I'm just a transplant and I'm not invested. I moved here from the city of Detroit, which I understand gets a lot of bad press we'll say. But one thing that my city, my home city, made me very proud of this past election year, when so many of us were recovering from this election year, was that the residents of the community voted on the ballot and passed a CBA ordinance. I was incredibly proud of Detroit, and having moved to Portland 6 years ago, I was looking forward to a very progressive city that I could settle down and create roots in. I bought my home 4 years ago. I've become very active in my neighborhood association, which is the Kenton Neighborhood Association. I think some of you were there at the vote a couple months ago, may have seen me there. So I really have made this my home, and I really am here today as a community member to support and advocate for the resolutions. But again, as Mr. Myers testified, as Mr. Jensen testified, without that trigger point that Commissioner Salzman proposed in an amendment, I don't believe that it gets this city to the progressive values that it claims to have. I'm very excited about the steps that we've moved towards. I think that, and I recognize that there have been tremendous moves from where we started several years ago. But I think there's still a few things lacking that we need to consider when looking at these resolutions. Mr. Reinhart and Mr. James mentioned, and I fully agree, that there is an underutilization of minority and female businesses on large-scale projects in this city. I don't think any of us are disagreeing with that assertion. Where I think there is also an underutilization is with minority and female workforce. I think having a trigger point to a CBA helps to accomplish increasing minority and female workforce. Of concern for me is that I don't believe, I think it's the CEIC, as Mr. Myers pointed out, it's not yet dictated who's going to be on that. The CBA is very clear about which parties will participate in oversight. Not just which parties, but the fact that those parties encompass everybody involved. So you've got both the pre-apprenticeship programs, the owner, the unions, the contractors, all involved in working together with oversight together. I think that's the only way where you can truly accomplish transparent, neutral, and unbiased oversight to ensure that goals are being met. I don't think, as written, that the CEIP meets that. However, we're willing to concede this and agree to the CEIP for projects under $25 million. We would like the CBA to be applied for projects over $25 million. And again, the only way that I can personally support the resolutions would be with Commissioner Saltzman's proposed amendment. Now, getting to the second amendment with regards to the shift from 100,000 to 500,000, again, like Mr. Jensen mentioned, this is the first time I've heard of this, so I would need some more time to look into it, and it sounds like we will have some more time. But just from what I know this morning, my understanding, and to clarify what Mr. Meyer said earlier, my understanding is that the new state law is that for projects that are as a whole at $5 million and above, subs who are at $200 and above would be at the threshold requirement. So if the subs are at the $200,000 and the city is putting a $500,000 threshold on it, then that really means that the state, in my opinion, is surpassing the requirements than over the city. So I think, as Mr. Meyer said earlier, I think as the city of Portland, we have an opportunity to surpass what the state is doing, or at least meet what the state is doing. I also think if we change it to 500,000, we might run into issues with that conflicting with the state's law. And again, I'd have to look more into it because this is all brand new to me. So where I am right now is as a community member and as general counsel for Local 701, I do appreciate the work that's been put into these resolutions. the only way I would be able to support it would be with Mr. Salzman's first proposed amendment, and I'd have to look into the second one.
Very good. And just for the record, we'll keep the written record open, so as people have their conversations and do their analysis, we'd certainly welcome written testimony between mm-hmm. now and when we actually take the vote on the resolutions. Commissioner Fritz?
Wouldn't we also accept amendments at the second?
Absolutely.
And so then people could testify on the amendments?
Yeah, absolutely. Commissioner Udaly, do you have a comment as well? No? Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioner, Mayor Wheeler. My name is James Posey. I'm a community member first, and I kind of chuckled because when you guys talked about community input, I wasn't even aware of this meeting and was not contacted. I think I've been a consistent presenter to this body in regards to this issue for over years. I go back as far as Bud Clark in terms of these proposals, et cetera. But given an opportunity just to really recently review these amendments, I must say there is some progress. I mean, I know you all expect me to say something negative about it, but at the end of the day, there is some progress. The whole idea of having an alternative bidding process in and of itself is quite remarkable and really a good thing. The whole concept with Jeff Moreland being a primary person working on projects that will allow someone to epitomize the success of having a community member willing to hire people of color and really demonstrate that this can be done and there is a process in which we can have success is really, really important. That in and of itself is a real piece that I think is worthy. But what troubles me about this process is you all's unwillingness to have complete transparency and a system that will keep us on track with where we really are standing with people, not only in the contracting area, but also in terms of the workforce. It's shameful for us not to be able to look in real time and see, for example, who are the operating engineers, not just on the apprenticeship level, but across the board. So we can actually project out how long it would take to get equity in that whole operating engineers, but they're willing to challenge you all about what we have in the system. But I'm not sure I've ever seen in any of these unions what their census is, who's there, where, how long, their mentoring program, and who's associated with what. This is intellectually untenable for us to be going down this road without having enough information. So when I was looking at these resolutions, the first thing I wanted to look at and the first whereas is, where is the numbers? What's the baseline? How do we get there? And it's not there in any of these resolutions. So that's one of the things. I took the resolutions, whereas, and this is my version of a resolution, whereas in the past, there has been virtually no consequence for failure. Dante James got up here and talked about, well, we got teeth. Well, it's subliminal. And it's Udaly is laughing because, you know, if there's no consequence for failure, then guess what? We ultimately are going to get the same results. And we've been doing this for about 40 or 30 years. And when you have a body of people, respondents to these issues, who keep going down the same road year after year, century after century, and there's no consequence, then they, believe me, they're going to keep doing the same thing over and again. So I was looking for something in these resolutions that really not only makes consequences, but really incentivizes the history of failure that we've had over the last several years. For example, if a contractor is doing well, why not give them that preference? Don't make it subliminal. Make it a highlight. Make it a privilege to have a contractor who really is hiring people from out of our community. So at the end of the day, this is not about the contractors or about the workers. It's about making communities whole. When you look back and see who's getting this work, is it people living in our community, or is it people living in Vancouver or Hillsboro, or what? We have no fabric. When I get on my maps, I can tell what house is here or what house is there, who lives in it, and everything. But we can't tell whether the economic programs we're designing is impacting the community that have high rates of unemployment, housing issues, or et cetera. Are we making a difference by virtue of how we're structuring these programs? And I don't think we are. We don't have an economist lens. We don't have anybody looking at this to see whether or not we have a, like we do an environmental impact statement. Do we have an economic impact statement?